this week. Bargains, bargains everywhere as U.S. equities investors turn to precious metal stocks and Bitcoin. Welcome back, everyone. Chris Waltzek, it's just my pleasure to be with you this weekend. We have another big show and two industry insiders. Well, the U.S. equity slide continued this week. Unless you live in a deep underground bunker, you probably know the Dow shed 1,300 by Friday, adding to 1,100 last week. At one point, intraday, I believe it was off over 2,000 points this week. But you know, that's points. That's not percentages. Sure, these numbers are scary, but when you put it in perspective, you know, we were only off 10, 15%. Most serious technicians look for at least 20% to call it a correction. So the rebound off the lows were very impressive. I do think precious metals investors were understandably a little upset by the fact that gold did not blast off into the stratosphere. Many of our top guests have hypothesized on this show that once equities rolled over, it would be to the moon, Alice, for the yellow metal. Not so fast. We didn't see that. Yes, it gave back a little bit more this week, but dollar strength seems to be to blame as investors viewed the stronger than expected economic numbers, wage growth from the Fed, as a sign of another rate hike, and we'll certainly see one in March at the FOMC meeting slated for next month. Still, precious metal shares, however, held up well, much better than their colleagues, and I'll outline three of my favorites later on in this market weather report. So, starting with our guest, Nick Barashev from Bullion Management Group, a favorite guest of ours, who penned the must-read book, 10,000 Gold, Why Gold's Inevitable Rise is the Investor's Safe Haven, 2013. And I have two copies. One of them is his actual in the binder original that they sent to us, and they're both early, if not first editions. So for my next 5-year and 10-year subscribers, I'll send you this, plus our Bitcoin wallet, and of course our favorite tokens that we've talked about. You can have your own copy right here in the actual binder edition. The first 5-year subscriber will receive this original edition, and the first 10-year receives both. Our guest notes that portfolio diversification is the hallmark of financial success. And when was that more evident than this week? Man, is that boring? And that was even the topic of my boring dissertation, enhanced portfolio theory. It's just one of those amazing things that works. It's like insurance. No one thinks twice about having car insurance, house insurance. We just do it. We grin, we bear it, we send off the premium. We've got a lot of Bitcoin millionaires listening. We have folks that have bet the ranch on gold and silver and even stocks. Well, it's time to start that diversification process. It's a little painful at first, but believe me, you'll sleep better at night. And what is the diversification tool du jour? It's gold. Any diversification chart, the correlation is amazing. I spent a number of years, you know, studying correlation analysis, covariances, even the coefficient of variation. And I can tell you, I know these numbers backward and forward, expected value, the differences between expected value and the mean. Very few folks in this industry have a clue. When you start to really digest this information, you realize the power of diversification is stunning. And here's another example. I remember about a year and a half ago, I was convinced U.S. stocks were finished. They just had a failed breakout from a long consolidation. I thought, that's it. Tossing in the towel. No more. I'm not interested in this anymore. And look what's happened. We've had at least a 40, 50% move since then. You just can't beat diversification. Folks who don't have stock exposure, if you wanted that diversification, this is not a recommendation. I'm not buying, although I would if I had any cash. I think that these represent some much better valuations than we saw just 2 weeks ago, 10 to 20% off the highs, depending on which index you look at. Now, Nick Barashev, of course, is a perennial gold bull. He outlines an interesting case for a divergence between paper gold and bullion gold. He thinks this could happen at around 3,000 to 5,000. Once that comes to pass, if it comes to pass, he thinks we could see a parabolic Bitcoin-like rise to 50,000 an ounce. And I suspect that's probably even on the low end, given his prognostications. Of course, I think it's important for us to take this one step at a time. We'd be happy just to see 1,500, right? And then 1,900. And then we'll talk about 2,000 to 2,500. But a lot of our favorite guests and top pundits are looking just for that. Chris Blasi, president of Neptune Global, returns to the show, underscores the 4,000-year track record of gold as sound money. Yes, we've all heard this. But what I think is most interesting about his work, and of course his remarkable track record as a successful business and financial engineer, he believes, well, the last 5 or 6 years was not a bear market. It was simply a healthy 50% retracement from the 2011 zenith, which means the multi-year bull advance could still see the most pronounced and exciting stage of this 18-year bull market. How interesting. So he's looking for at least 2,500 to 3,000 by the year 2020. Yeah, that's less than 2 years away, folks. He also expects to see silver climb to $75 an ounce, and that actually jibes with several of our recent guests as well. So it could be an outperform for the precious metals. And if you know any targeted individuals, MKUltra and related programs, I'm trying to add an informative video that I think can be sent and forwarded to your friends, family, colleagues, that almost anyone can start to wrap their minds around. I have some really good news for you heroic people. In the last 20 years since I first started researching this in the late 90s, I'd just come to the conclusion that there would never be an end, that we could never hope to see an end to this organized harassment, gang stalking, and all of these other unsavory things. But these two brilliant researchers, Daniel Leibovitz, actual radiologist working right now, and Dr. Robert Duncan, have really risked their reputations, their lives, in defense of TIs. It's remarkable. And I have some of their videos. Also, the Vice Channel, just one of the best channels around, put up a fantastic 46 or so minute expose on this phenomenon. Believe me, folks, there's more people than you'd think, at least 1 to 3 million in the U.S. and all around the world, who are targeted by this Holocaust-like, and I say that with reverence, credible survivors and heroes. You probably know a few. These are some videos to get self-educated and to help those who they know to understand maybe they're not as nutty as people think. Maybe, just maybe, they're right. And then the Q&A hotline, 641-715-3900, followed by our extension number 514049. We really would appreciate it if you'd sign up for the newsletter, even just for 1 year if you'd like. It helps keep the lights on here. We're still giving away the free Bitcoin wallets for 1 year subscriptions. That really helps us so much. If you really feel like you get something from this show, we've been doing this for 12 years and it just helps us so much when you sign up. Plus, I gave over 2 weeks ago big warnings on a stock market peak. So I appreciate the thank you letters. And a lot of our investors, I think, benefited from hedging. Plus, Robert Ian with his always fascinating report, must hear as he wraps up this big show. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. Partly cloudy skies appeared over the precious metals sector on Friday as investors were unnerved by the temporary government shutdown. Panic gripped U.S. stocks, which led to margin selling, and some funds were directed into precious metals and Bitcoin. The U.S. dollar rebounded sharply on stronger-than-expected U.S. wage numbers, which hinted at further rate hikes as soon as next month, making the greenback a relative value to its peers, with, of course, better return. Gold finished off 1% at around $1,315, while silver shed 4%, ending at $1,614. The precious metals XAU gave back 5.5%, ending at $78.35. And it was rather tough week across the board, though, for commodities, which really did poorly. Little surprise surprised to hear that black gold was off about 10%. That was tough. Just under 60 per barrel, still up sharply in the recent months. But Bitcoin shone brightly, with the GBTC actually up 20% over 1420 on Friday. Well, meanwhile, the stunning stock market plunge highlighted the need for the precious metals ballast in every portfolio. Plus, gold shares, according to one media source, did remarkably well, including Klondex Mines, Harmony Gold, small caps, which were up around 5% on Friday, while royalty company Sandstorm Gold added 1.5%. In related news, the Labor Department showed wages in December grew by about 3% year over year. That was the best showing since the last financial crisis of 2008. Clearly, this is a sign of inflation building, which just adds further weight to the case for FOMC rate hikes next month, which is currently expected. Fed funds futures show about 71% odds, off a little bit from last week, but still rather solid indication we'll see that rate hike as inflation continues to slowly climb back into the market. Bottom line on precious metals and Bitcoin. Well, from a tech vantage point, gold held up well, but shares and silver continued to slump off. I continue to see bullish patterns in the sector, but this last 2 week sell-off and volatility increase in the financial sector, that's a warning sign. Bitcoin was hit hard, but then roared back after testing lows. We'll have to keep an eye on this. Was that the ultimate bottom? Perhaps. Still a lot of nervousness in investors across the board. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, heavy clouds hovered over the New York Stock Exchange on Friday for the second week running, as news of the government shutdown led to panic margin selling calls, with the Dow down about 2,000 intraday at one point. It was off, though, at 1330 by Friday, a 4% loss, closing at 25,520. The S&P 500 gave back 142, ending at 26,19, while the NASDAQ was off 366 at 68,75. All three indexes are now firmly in the red for 2018. The top story moving the markets, clearly margin call selling. Investors sold some of their gold holdings to meet some of their margin calls on leveraged stocks. Plus, that labor report, as I mentioned, made folks nervous about rate hikes. While it was the steepest intraday point drop, 1,600 points, in its history, of course, that's not on a percentage basis. And we've moved so much sharply now, I don't see any way to compare this recent sell-off with anything like 2008, 2009, or even the year 2000 sell-offs, or even 87 for that matter. The VIX index spike about 100% to the highest point ever recorded. But again, that sounds like panic selling of nervous investors. U.S. shares, bottom line. We really didn't see much of a sign of a bottom last week, but who could have anticipated this level of a sell-off? According to FactSet report, the earnings per share are still at a record high. Plus, the FOMC meeting, you know, they'll obviously bump up rates at the next meeting. Investors probably want to wait and see what's happening there. In the USA Today Fear and Greed Index, showed really the sharpest, most fearful percentage plunge maybe since the index was created years ago. I feel that very confident in saying that shares could be nearing a solid bottom. Again, not a recommendation, just an observation. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek Radio. Pleasure to welcome back Nick Barishev, President and CEO of Bullion Management Group. That's BMG, widely known as an international bullion and precious metals expert and author of the must-read 10,000 Gold, Why Gold's Inevitable Rise is the Investor's Safe Haven. And it looks like 2018 will be that year, as I'm sure we'll get into today. Welcome, Nick Barishev.
My pleasure.
So great to have you. This is going to be the year. This is where we break out. We've been waiting for this consolidating backing and filling for over 2 years, and there's signs of life in the XAU shares, even silver tossed out with the bathwater silver. So give us an idea of your outlook on 2018, please.
Well, I think it's a positive year, and I did a recent speech at the Empire Club, outlined some of the major trend shifts that have kept the gold price suppressed and how they've either, you know, about to end or change radically. And that's where I think there's no stopping these sort of macro trend shifts that are taking place. And in most cases, these are not covered by the mainstream media, so people are totally unaware that all of this is happening in the background.
Exactly. That really puts us in a quandary, doesn't it? What does the everyday investor do?
The issue that I've preached ever since we've been here is that first starting point that investors need to start with is diversification. And this is where there's a huge misconception. You know, everybody seems to believe in diversification, but they don't implement. The typical investment portfolio is 60-40 stocks and bonds. That is simply not diversification. There are 7 asset classes in total. So there's cash, stocks, bonds, commodities, real estate, precious metals, and collectibles. And I say, okay, for purposes of dealing with your financial advisor, he's not going to deal with collectibles, but collectibles are like numismatic coins, arts, exotic cars, whatever you want there. That's something that you have to develop personal expertise to deal with. But when you do, then collectibles become a hobby that in many cases will outperform financial assets. Since I'm a bit of a car buff, if you take a 1970, I think it's 71 Daytona Ferrari, which wasn't a particularly good car. It looked like a, you know, Datsun 240Z. And they were 17,000 back then in 1971. Today they're 2.5 million, and you got to drive it on Sunday afternoons. You know, so collectibles can be very good, but let's take those off the table. The other thing that you can take off the table is commodities, because unless you've got a lot of expertise in the futures contracts, that there isn't any meaningful way to buy commodities. Like, you can't buy a truckload of lumber and store it for 20 years. So commodities are a little tougher for most portfolios other than institutional or very wealthy investors. So basically, you're left with stocks, bonds, cash, real estate, and precious metals. So the reason it makes up a diversified portfolio is because of the negative correlation. And this always blows my mind, because Harry Markowitz got a Nobel Prize for modern portfolio theory. So here's a quote from him. In order to reduce risk, it's necessary to avoid a portfolio whose securities are all highly correlated with each other. 100 securities whose returns rise and fall in near unison afford little protection than the uncertain return of a single security. What you have to do is mix your asset categories so that there's a degree of non-correlation between the asset classes. The asset class that has the most non or negative correlation to financial assets like stocks and bonds is gold. Silver less so, because silver at a lot of times acts like a commodity and other times like a monetary asset. So when it acts as a monetary asset, it's also non-correlated. But when it acts as a commodity, it can be correlated. Okay? So that's the thing. So your first starting point is to add some gold to your portfolio. How much? Well, we've run the numbers, and if we took a typical 60-40 stock and bond portfolio, then you need at least 10%, you know, over the, you know, the past 10 years. Today, I believe you need at least 20% for what's coming. So that's the starting point. Without knowing all the complex issues about gold,
here we have stocks. I mean, even the bulls are a little stunned. Most estimates for the year were eclipsed S&P 500 in the first 2 weeks of the year. Things are getting a bit extended. You know, your concept and Harry Markowitz, if you've ever read his papers.
So here's a guy that have won a Nobel Prize, and how many advisors, regulators, and so on have ever heard of them? I understand modern portfolio theory.
I can say this in all humility, but I actually, that was the title of my dissertation, Enhanced Modern Portfolio Theory. You know, just think of a keel of a boat. Most boats have a keel, and then they tend to be weighted as well. And this just keeps the boat, the ship, the sailboat, it keeps it afloat in rough seas. And you wouldn't even dream of lifting your sails without having that weighted keel, or at least some type of stabilizer in the water. It would be suicide. It would just capsize your boat, your ship immediately. I think it's an interesting parallel between precious metals, because not only are they heavy, metallic, like a lead weight in a keel, they really truly have this negative correlation, which so aptly balances, you know, the S&P and the stocks and even the bonds to a lesser extent, and it brings your portfolio close to that zero value that we're looking for if you've read, really researched Professor Markowitz's work.
A traditional 60-40 portfolio and put 10 to 20% in gold, then what happens is that the standard deviation of the portfolio is reduced and the return is increased. It's that simple. It's math. It's black and white facts. There's no debate about that. Just do it, run the numbers, and you'll see the results.
But how many people understand that, you know, your standard deviation is the square root of the variance of your data? It's just that simple. Without, you know, those of us who really are fond of the minutiae and who truly enjoy breaking down the data into the expected value and the variance and then deriving our standard deviation, you have a better grasp of the true nature of risk. If you read all the great works of Nassim Taleb, who I think, yeah, only the cognoscenti have picked up on his work, because his breakthroughs, talk about deserving a Nobel Prize. And what he's pointed out is everybody blows up who does not put risk first.
Here's the second part that's a bit of a myth and is a misconception, and that is to always stay invested. There's, you know, a Wall Street saying, I think, that was attributed to the Rothschilds to say, buy stocks when there's blood in the streets. So what that means is that instead of staying fully invested, the real opportunities come not being invested and having cash available when you have a serious market decline. So let me give you an example. In 1999-2000, we had the tech bubble. And in a tech bubble, there was several large companies that acted like today's FANG stocks. So at the time, it was Cisco, IBM, Microsoft, and Oracle, I believe. Maybe one more, but I can't remember. So those stocks, they were good companies throughout the period. The revenues grew, the companies grew, everything grew. However, if you stayed invested through the whole period after the decline, and it was about a 70% decline in 2000, there was only two of those stocks that broke even 2 years ago, and the rest haven't yet broken even, and there was nothing wrong with the companies. If you had liquidated at a peak and sat in cash and bought in at about 2001, you made tons of money. Those were spectacular returns then. So there's this misconception that you got to be invested. There's times, like today, to take your money off the table because the risk of a loss is far greater than thinking you're going to eke out the last little bit of gain. That just doesn't happen in the real world. So now you've got a risk of a 50 to a 70% decline from the markets. But when that declines, you know, if you want to take the FANG stocks as an example, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, that kind of thing, those will be 50 to 70% less in maybe a year from now, maybe 2 years from now. So if we're sitting out of the market, buying back then will be the greatest opportunity in your lifetime, as long as you're not invested. Instead of cash, you're far better off sitting in gold during this period, because the cash is still devaluing. The gold will go up dramatically during this period, so you'll have more money to invest in cheap stocks. So that's the other opportunity that people are missing. This will be the greatest opportunity in our lifetime to invest as long as you're in cash or gold at the time.
Firstly, applaud your analysis here, and I think you're just 100%, maybe 105% correct. The one proviso I would toss in for everyday folks, maybe not people like Nick Barishef, I do like the idea of staying fully invested with a broad diversification, and then when one asset maybe just goes absolutely ballistic, like Bitcoin or the S&P 500, you have this incredible opportunity to take some profits and reallocate them to gold and maybe even a cash position.
Where we are today, right now, a lot of people took their assets out of gold and reallocated it to NASDAQ and Dow stocks. So now they're overweight. Where they started with a 60-40 portfolio, they might be up to 75-80% in equities. If you're just going to reallocate, well, we'll reallocate back to 60-40. But the issue is still, people think, is, well, I'll be smart enough to that I'll pull out at the top. Typically, that never happens. What happens to the average investor is we could have a situation like Japan where there was no crash. What happened in Japan was one day it went down 10%, then a little while later it went up 5%, another time it went down 20%, and then, you know, up 10%, so on. That went on for 3 years. But if you woke up at the end of the 3 years, you were down 70%. And you didn't even notice it was happening. And what investors do is when the market goes down 10%, they'll say, well, there's going to be a recovery. I'll just wait and then I'll sell. So then the market goes up and say, oh, that was just a blip, so I'm not going to sell. So then it goes down further. And then they get to the point when they're down 40%. Well, they can't sell. This is too big a loss. So they keep holding on until the loss becomes 50 or 70%, and then in a panic, they sell.
I'd like you to address another issue that I think really just corroborates your thoughts today, that I wonder how many professionals are really even pondering the risk of third parties with your bullion investment. You talked about the potential for risk in the general markets themselves, but I think it's easy to forget that exchange-traded funds and related funds are part of that system. It's not unencumbered. It's tied up within a clearing mechanism, which if you really start to look into a bit, looks a bit shady and underhanded, under the table.
Big misconception on ETFs, and it doesn't matter whether it's gold or equity ETFs. People think that ETFs are just like open-end mutual funds, and except for low management fees, and I can buy and sell them several times a day. They're nothing like an open-end mutual fund trust. The assets that go into an ETF come from an authorized participant, which are the big banks and brokerage houses. They're the only ones that are authorized participants. They're the only ones that effectively contribute assets or redeem assets from the ETF. So when an individual wants to, you know, buy or redeem, they're buying from the authorized participant or selling to the authorized participant. So that's number one. Now, the thing is that if you follow the money, you have to ask yourself, is Goldman Sachs going to go to the market and buy equities at net asset value, contribute them to the ETF at net asset value, get new shares from the ETF at net asset value, in order to sell them to their clients at net asset value? What in fact happens is Goldman Sachs borrows the assets, Goldman Sachs or any other authorized participant, borrows the assets from someone. It can be from client margin accounts, from hedge funds where they act as the prime broker, from mutual funds where they act as the prime broker, and they take these borrowed assets and contribute them to the ETF. But the assets now are double counted. Two owners. There's the original owner in the brokerage account that think he owns the asset, and there's the ETF that thinks they own the asset. So if the authorized participant becomes insolvent in the process, then you've got two claims against the same asset. And the lawyers get rich for the next 10 years. It is worse than that in the case of gold, because in the case of gold, the only place they can get gold is from the central banks. So they lease the gold from the central banks. What a lease means is that under a lease, title is not transferred. The lessor is still the owner of the asset. So the central bank still owns the asset. The authorized participant parks the asset with the GLD, and there it is in the vault for everybody to see, except that the GLD doesn't own it. The central bank still does. And if anything ever happens to the authorized participant, the central bank is simply going to send a note to the GLD and say, please send my gold back to my vault. So they think they're getting, you know, cheap gold because the management fee is only 0.5%. But in fact, they're buying into an illusion. And that gold will fall apart the very minute where you need it the most.
It sort of defeats the purpose, doesn't it? So in such an uncertain world where more than half of North American inhabitants couldn't even purchase much more than a quarter an ounce of gold, and they're too afraid to because they may need that for next month's rent or to put food on the table for the family. Is there a solution, or are we just not talking to that crowd today?
There isn't a solution for that crowd. I mean, the miles of homeless people in California, you know, are not going to be buyers of gold or silver or anything else. And so that's a whole other issue that you know, gold and silver don't sell. But let's say for someone that's still in the middle class, the first step is that you need some physical cash at home so that there are a period which doesn't involve a total crash where the banks are closed and everything else. But you could even have like something as simple as a weather situation or a software glitch where the ATMs don't work and your credit cards don't work and so on. So start with getting a comfortable amount of physical cash, and that depends on how wealthy you are. The second step is you get physical silver coins, either Eagles or Maple Leafs, not the numismatic coins, the straight bullion coins. So that's your second level of defense. Then if you're still rich enough and you need more, that's where you buy the physical bullion to be stored in allocated storage in a non-bank vault like Brinks. So those are the different steps. You know, like I say, the starting point is simply cash. There's no downside. You take every paycheck, you take some cash out and keep building it up till you've got a good stash of cash. You know, and then you move on to silver coins and then move on to your investment gold and silver that you don't want. People think that they should have physical possession of, but they don't understand the custodial arrangements. It needs to be allocated storage. You need to get a receipt or a statement from the vault that identifies each bar by serial number, refiner, exact weight and exact purity. Okay, that's the same like your ownership of your car says the make, model, serial number, and color. So that's what you need in gold. If you don't have that information, you don't own the gold in storage.
Can you give us an idea on whether or not you share some analysts' opinion that we may, here in North America, experience something that maybe parallels Venezuelan runaway inflation or Weimar? Of course, we're in a very different geopolitical and legal system here. Very hard, I think, to make an exact analogy. But still, in Venezuela, the situation, you know, a simple small hand of silver and gold coins today can purchase a county. And it was, as we all know, the pride of South America. Do you see something like that on our horizon?
Well, I think it's in the works. So in my Empire Club speech, which people can go on our site and you'll see the whole speech to it together with the transcript, okay? So the issue is that China and Russia have been making moves to replace the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency. But the biggest move in that point is last year's announcement that China will be buying oil in yuan, and the yuan will be converted on the Shanghai exchange into gold. So the issue there is that Russia, Iran, and Venezuela have signed up for that. And the Saudis are getting very friendly with both Russia and China in terms of trade and arms sales. If Saudi ever switches and say, we'll sell our oil for whatever, euros, yuan, U.S. dollar, whatever comes along, then the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency is over. The only reason it's the world's reserve currency is because oil and all commodities are priced in U.S. dollars. When that happens, the U.S. dollar will lose purchasing power and will lose its value against other currencies. So it'll be more expensive to import anything. And the U.S. will become a third world country very rapidly. That's the simple reality. And it's not a theory. It's happening already. And if you go through my speech in detail, you'll see all the reasons. So these are the macro trend changes that are happening in the background that people aren't aware of.
So you might want to give people your outlook for 2018 with the precious metals and maybe even go a few years further, if you'd like.
The main issue is that at some point in the near future, there'll be a separation of the paper gold price on the COMEX and the physical gold price. Now, I've had this argument for a long time, ever since I've started the fund. And in 1998, that actually happened because Ford Motor Company bought $5 billion worth of palladium at twice the COMEX spot price in a private deal, because you can't build cars with paper palladium. So the same kind of thing will happen. So at the time you have this divergence, the gold price might be $3,000 to $5,000 an ounce. After the diversion happens, it'll go ballistic. $50,000 would not be unrealistic. And there's several pundits, Jim Rickards,
Max Kaiser, Stacy Herbert.
Max Kaiser, several of them are saying essentially the same thing. So I think that's where we are. So this year we might get to, $1,400, $1,500, that kind of a number. But now it'll keep trucking on. So now we're in this second phase of the bull market that started in 2002 and was corrected in 2011 because of the naked short selling that's on the COMEX. And in my transcript of this speech, I've got several charts that showed the magnitude of the naked short selling.
And imagine if that naked short selling was made transparent and the mechanism was the blockchain.
That's right. This is where this can change. But you see, the Shanghai exchange, there is no naked short selling. In order to sell something, you have to own it. So it doesn't work like the COMEX. It's totally bizarre that people can sell billions of dollars of gold without owning any gold. And they do the sale after hours when there is no market participants to beat up the price. No legitimate trader would ever do that.
You know, it was such an issue in France for nearly 100 years, naked short selling, that to this day it's outlawed. It destroyed their entire country. The risks posed, not just to the financial markets, but to society as a whole. We've lost at least 100 fantastic companies in this country alone due entirely to unsavory naked shorting.
Well, that's right. But in the case of equity markets, it's illegal to do naked shorting. But some of it was being done illegally. But in the futures markets, it's not illegal. You can sell as much, of any commodity that you want without owning the commodity, as long as you're good for the cash to settle in cash. That's where it totally distorts the market. So where that's ending, though, is there's class action lawsuits started in both Canada and the United States against the 6 bullion banks. After the class actions was approved as a class action, Deutsche Bank, which is one of the named banks, right away settled, and they agreed to pay $60 million for gold, $38 million for silver, but most importantly, agreed to cooperate with the plaintiffs and give testimony against the other bank.
You know, I'm just convinced that the transparency that will arise from the blockchain phenomenon will eventually work its way into the precious metals, because so many in the gold crowd have been disparaging cryptos, Bitcoin, things of that nature, altcoins. And I can see why, because certainly it's drawn attention away from bullion. But if you can step back and take a bigger look, and this is the topic of a lot of our shows, that what it's really done is exposed the cracks in the fiat money fiasco around the world. When a digital number that's essentially encoded is suddenly worth 18,000 times more than a U.S. dollar? Imagine what happens when that system brings to light the schemes that have been behind the gold money suppression for 30 years.
Well, where this boils down to is the late 60s, early 70s. The typical investor institution or otherwise held 5% in gold, okay? And today, what's happened is the financial assets have grown, and the gold price has also grown, but been relatively moderate. So what happens when 5% of the financial assets today decide that they need to buy 5% in gold? Well, the numbers, what that works out to is out of the financial assets, which are about, let me look it up, 294 trillion. 5% of 294 trillion is about 14 trillion. Now, the amount of above ground investment gold, even though there's been 180,000 tons, you know, mined, you know, since, you know, throughout history, there's only about 1.8 trillion of actual investment grade gold. Now, how much of that is for sale is unknown, because a lot of that is owned by very wealthy families like the Rothschilds that won't sell it at any price. But even if we took that figure of 1.8 trillion at face value, and if we moved up to just 5% of global portfolios to gold, then what you've got is 14.7 trillion of cash chasing 1.8 trillion of above-ground investment bullion. So in order for that to work, mine production is falling, so you can't increase mine supply. So the only thing that can happen is you can adjust the price. To adjust the price, the gold price has to go up about eightfold to about 10,500 per ounce. And when people panic a little bit, that's what will happen. They'll be moving out of financial assets into physical gold.
You haven't even brought into your equation yet the prospect of leverage, margin.
That's almost taking a best case scenario.
You're saying, look, folks, this is headed your way. That's your best case. So heaven help you if the momentum traders, and I can't imagine why they would get interested in such an amazing opportunity, suddenly turn their trillions on this tiny, I guess, $7 to $10 trillion precious metals mark. The amazing climb of the cryptos, once again, I keep running to it. We don't have to cover it. If we can see those types of over 1 million fold gains in Bitcoin, I think it gives you a litmus test.
Idea of what could happen when the gold's momentum starts rising, which it will this year.
I'm asking all my guests, do you believe it's possible that the cryptos are telegraphing a Weimar, a Zimbabwe, a Venezuelan-style fiat collapse is imminent?
The only thing to remember about cryptos, though, is that as a potential momentum indicator, I agree. It'll be a good example of the kind of momentum that can be achieved in gold.
I think you're right. And I think that we're already seeing that, because many of the top Bitcoin whales are turning to gold this year, because obviously Bitcoin got to bubble levels. So what do you turn to? You can't turn to equities, and you can't go to the 30-year bond bubble. I mean, palladium is just the gem of the metals commodity sector. We see something like that erupting in the precious metals today. Any closing comments on the metal sector?
Well, just that I think the starting point is diversify and start with at least 10% in physical bullion, then, you know, go from there. So that's the recommendation. 0.5% today in terms of allocation between institutional private investors. 0.5% is what everybody holds in gold. That's not nearly enough.
Exactly. You know, I think you made a good point earlier that typically 10%, but in this environment, 20%. And as these other asset bubbles continue to blow up even larger as the equities, you know, who knows? Will we see 50,000 or 100,000 before the peak? I mean, they can, with these deep pockets, as we said, print as much money as they want, plunge protection team and other entities on Wall Street. So
it's like there's an old Wall Street saying, put 10% of your money into gold and hope it doesn't work.
In this instance, you're saying put 20% in gold because it's going to work.
Well, that's right.
All right, Nick Bereshef, just a pleasure, as always, hearing your thoughts. Any contact information on BMG Group?
It is bmggroup.com. There, they, like I say, they can go to our Market Insights section and get the entire Empire Club speech and a transcript, and there'll be some very important insights there in terms of the macro trend changes.
All right, Nick Bereshef, always a pleasure. Please return in 2018 to keep us updated with all your gold insights.
Okay, my pleasure.
Pleasure to welcome Chris Blasi, president of Neptune Global Holdings today. Welcome, Chris Blasi.
Thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Really neat to have you back, and what a neat time, you know, with gold up about 8%, quite a rally this year. Some folks have said, well, it's cryptos, Bitcoin profits pouring out of that market, which is under heavy pressure, into maybe the most sound money of all. People want to see that digital money turn into antiquated gold, yellow metal. What is this stuff? You can't send it instantly. What is gold to these young folks, the millennials today?
You know, this is an indictment on economic education, right? If you, any college economics department, there's never been talk about gold for decades. It's been written off and is misunderstood. But you know what? For 5,000 years, it has always been real money. And when I say gold, I'm going to use that as the representative of all the precious metals. And when you look at the charts, you know, I've made this statement for a couple of years now. We're in a long-term secular bull market for gold and the precious metals. It began in 2001, like all secular markets, it runs 20 to 25 years with three major legs. Leg one was 2001 to 2012. That middle pullback leg, multi-year, was 2000, basically 12 down to the December of 2015, where the price retraced 50%, which is just perfect and textbook. In the beginning of 2016, we entered the next leg, which is the third leg, and is always the most explosive leg. So, Chris, you look at how the metals have been performing. They've been up for the last 2 years. We're going into this third year, again, up and strong. And I think it's just playing out a perfect textbook. Now, we know there is interference in the markets. They come in and knock the price down at certain times just to dampen the enthusiasm. And some people don't even realize how well gold has been doing for the last couple of years. But you step back from that noise, and the charts are beautiful. And I think we're, like I said, we are in the third leg, which is going to be a multi-year, and generally the third legs give you the most explosive and greatest gains.
Well, you are certainly preaching to the choir, you might say, here today, because awful lot of precious metals aficionados listening. We've just kind of forgotten that silver was also the standard. 1873, almost outlawed silver as a coinage. We had some up to about 100 years later in the 1960s when it was finally abolished. Do you see better times ahead for silver as well?
Chris, I think the whole precious metals complex. Each metal's a little bit different, right? Gold being the pure play as a monetary metal. Silver's that quasi-monetary and industrial. You know, we'll touch on the PMC ounce a little bit because of platinum and palladium, which are real industrial plays. But silver is, we know it's a very volatile metal, right? So in the interim, it can be a gut-wrenching ride. But as this secular bull market plays out that I described, silver will start to perform And probably when it's all said and done at the end of this long secular market, silver will probably outperform gold. It's not like the people who are holding gold are going to be wringing their hands. It'll just be a matter of degree. So I think the gains will be great for all. It's been tough for the silver folks, but their moment, their day is coming.
You know, turning to the PMC ounce rate, just to frame this up for listeners who can't see the chart here, that can be found at the Neptune Global website. Again, we'll have links. And what I find interesting is that platinum has been under pressure relative to gold, silver. This might present an opportunity. Do you expect platinum then to outperform the yellow metal and silver?
Sure. So, you know, and now we're talking market timing, and I'm not a great market timer. But what the PMC ounce does is it's a logically weighted and diversified turnkey physical precious metals position. Now, what's not showing on that chart, which is also a component of the PMC ounce, is palladium. And you're right. The last few years, platinum has been an underperformer, but palladium has been knocking the cover off the ball. I mean, palladium was up 52% last year. As much as gold is up this year, palladium continues to outperform. Over the last 4 years, palladium has outperformed all the precious metals. So that's what we do for, that's what the PMC ounce does for the investor. It says, look, I don't know when they're going to hit their stride. Just like silver, right? When is silver going to hit their stride? We know it, you know, your listeners and me and you, that it will, but we just don't know when. So the PMC ounce says, look, here's this physical precious metals portfolio, logically weighted, and therefore don't try to market time, but you're going to get the blended return and you're going to capture the upside of all these metals in their due time. So platinum is perking up right now. It has finally. I don't know if it's going to outperform. I mean, I think people are still stunned by the amazing run by palladium and that it's continuing. I can't market time, so I go into a vehicle like this.
You know, the palladium story, remarkable, obviously a play on the strong auto sector that might be indicating better times ahead for its colleagues, gold, silver, platinum.
It's funny because I spoke to some clients about this also for the last few days. You know, platinum and palladium and silver, you know, silver does have this industrial component aspect to it, are, you know, that's like looking at them from the commodity perspective. And look what's really happening in the commodity markets, right? Quiet. People don't realize oil's up over $60 a barrel. Do you remember only a few months ago, Chris, when I went to a conference, and I'm not going to name names, but with a very high-profile Wall Street analyst who pounded the table saying oil will never, ever in our lifetime be over $50 a barrel. We've heard that. I think you've heard that. We all have from many pundits, and here we are 60-plus. Copper's been perking up. So I think what's happening is, you know, the tangibles are getting their footing and getting their traction, and it's probably a combination of a global economy that's kind of perking up a little and a lot of cheap money that's being devalued versus these tangible assets. And the physical precious metals, they're definitely positioned to benefit from this.
From the perspective of return, bonds are boring. You have a much better portfolio tax situation for U.S. equities. What's going to perk up or continue this process of elevated prices in the precious metals when people just can't get enough of U.S. shares?
So I understand sticking and, you know, with the equities and, you know, and it's obviously that is a, you know, steals thunder. It keeps a lot of money penned up there. I think we would all agree it can't go on forever. I mean, even though people believe it can. I mean, you know, there are some advantages. I know that if you're in a mutual fund, an equity mutual fund, you're getting a 1099 every year and paying tax on gains, even though you haven't liquidated your position, which, you know, there are some tax advantages that aren't as, or tax situations that aren't as advantageous for precious metals. But then again, you can hold your precious metals for 20 years and you're not paying any tax on the gains until you eventually cash out. So there's positives and negatives to all. I would say that the gains in the precious metals since this third leg began have been respectable enough that you can't say you're missing out tremendously. I mean, you know, gold was up 12% last year. The PMC ounce was up 16%. You know, and since 2015, the PMC ounce has been up 34%. So I don't, you know, so the clients who own the PMC ounce are not, you know, felt like they're missed out, right? Their friends in the stock market have been getting all the gains, and they're doing quite well. And I can say that the folks that own the physical precious metals and they're, you know, they're back getting gains, I think they sleep comfortably knowing that at some point the stock market will have to give way. It just, you know, I know people can't believe it, but it just can't go up forever without pulling back. And then when that, you know, when the people do stampede out, we know what it's like. Most people don't get out in time before they take a serious haircut. I would say take some gains and, you know, be logical and start to build a little position in precious metals or add to it if you can.
Okay, and put you on the hot seat here for a moment on just how far the precious metals might run. I mean, given the fact that price has been quite subdued for a number of years, and you have, I think, brought up an interesting position that maybe new folks to the sector haven't thought about, and that is that we have remained in a bull market. It's just been a rather dull 5 or 6 years. With the resumption of the uptrend, things tend to get rather spectacular in the third wave. You referred to, whether you're an Elliott enthusiast or not, we could see some fireworks ahead. Do you want to talk about any impetus that might send us there? And just how far things could run.
You're right. The last 5 years, 3 of those years were rough because the price was declining. The last 2 years were actually going up, but because of what we'll call the negative press towards the precious metals in the mainstream financial media, people would think they weren't that great, but they were actually quite good. So you have the whole psychological aspect. And from my experience in the investment markets, psychology is one of the major components of investing. I mean, let's just look at the stock market. You can't say that PE ratios and the fundamentals support these prices. It's all being driven on momentum and psychology. Back to the precious metals, we are already in this bull market. It's just a matter of, you know, how long it goes. I think we're in for another multi-year run, like 2001 to 2012, which means at least 3-4 more years in front of us. And as far as upside potential, you know, and I'm going to give a very conservative number, gold getting to at least 2,500, 3,000. And I think you'll agree that's an extremely conservative number. But if you look at where gold is now, even that is a great return. You know, silver from its place around 17 and change now to $75 plus over the next couple of years, that's doable and that's a tremendous return. And we would both agree that's a lot lower than a lot of analysts who are of a very favorable and, I'll say, balanced opinion of precious metals share. I don't want to give the eye bleed numbers or the jaw dropping numbers. I would be quite content with just achieving those numbers in the next couple of years.
Well, it certainly parallels many of the folks here on our show in recent months, and even that of, you know, Stacey Herbert, Max Kaiser, looking for at least $2,400 within the next 12 to 24 months. These numbers might have seemed impossible a few years ago, but folks are used to bubbles now, and we've seen quite a bubble in the crypto space. Do you expect those funds to continue pouring into more solid investments like the precious metals?
Yes. If you look at the price action in the cryptos over the last couple of weeks, you'll see there's a lot of pressure. Right, I think a lot of the euphoria and the nonstop rise has been curtailed, and that makes people rethink things. I think some people are saying, "Look, you know, I'm trying." They're cashing out, and now they're going to, we'll call it a more fundamental investment like gold and silver or the precious metals. So I think that bodes very well for the metals. If we were to get any sort of downward pressure in the stock market, and even a fraction of that money came into precious metals, the availability of physical metal would dry up. I mean, it's a really thin market. There is one misnomer, I think, some people sitting on the sidelines who say, well, I believe that at some point I need to be in precious metals, but I'll wait for that event to happen, meaning the next crisis, like 2008. When that time comes, the availability of physical metal will be very scarce. I mean, there won't be much around. It's just really a very thin market. So it's one of those things, our opinion is you need to be prepared before the event. You need to be positioned before, after the fact will be too late. And if you do get it, it'll be at a substantially higher price.
Certainly positioned, I think, for spectacular gains in the precious metals. I think you've alluded to that. Do you see the possibility of maybe a hyperinflation-like environment ahead, or is that too far away for us to analyze?
I don't think it's too far away to analyze. I think it's definitely the fundamental role in place for it to happen. It's just a matter of, is it going to be one of his events where we kind of have to drop off the cliff? Or we just, is the U.S. dollar just going to grind down, get devalued versus, gold, kind of slowly, and maybe slowly pick up a little, accelerate a little? Or will it do that, and then at some point where you just hit a monumental event where it just drops off a cliff? I mean, the reality is both are able to happen. Both can happen. Personally, I hope it's more of a long, slow grind. That's just better for all of us. No one wants that monumental day where everything just kind of resets. But it's all doable. I mean, it's all possible. And that's why it's great to speculate, and we can lay out all the reasons for both scenarios taking place, long, slow devaluation versus collapse. Not to be a broken record, but the reality is the best preparation is to have your position. So under either scenario, you're going to benefit.
You know, I think the real question for investors, not just investors, but maybe for our policymakers, for our leaders, are we facing something similar to what's occurring in South America? I mean, if Venezuela wants the gem of that region, the people are really, really suffering. We're talking widespread unemployment, massive inflation. Zoos are being raided as primary food sources. Just to give you a less than savory perspective of what can happen to once affluent nations and very wealthy people. We need to be aware, at least, that the possibility exists. And I do think our officials will fight it, though. So we'll be looking at more of a war of attrition that I think you outlined. So give us an idea on what you see for 2018. I presume then that you probably like the precious metal shares, which have been subdued, but have been consolidating in a very narrow range for quite some time, maybe implying better things ahead.
Yeah, I think 2018, of course, we've already talked about that it should be favorable for the precious metals. I think things are firming up in all the commodities. That also may be the bellwether or the signal telling people that inflation is coming down the pike, that these prices are firming up. And therefore, you should look at your portfolio and see what would do well in an inflationary environment and what wouldn't. So maybe you need to evaluate where your bonds are, your fixed income instruments. I think it's coming. I think there's going to be volatility. The metals will be volatile, but with the positive upward bias at some point during this year, maybe when the stock market does start to give back some. I think you buckle up. We're going to be in for a lot of volatility. I think the political environment is going to lead to that volatility. There's pretty much a political war going on, domestically and internationally. Volatility generally serves the precious metals well and tangible assets well.
You're a big believer in bullion over most other investment vehicles?
Absolutely, because I look at it this way, Chris. The beauty and the unique thing about bullion is it's one of the only physical assets you can actually take control of. Other ones you always have to play just through a securitized product because they don't lend themselves to being stored. Like you take oil. It's not feasible. You're not going to build an oil silo and fill it with oil to play the oil market. So you're kind of forced to use securitized products. Same thing with the other commodities. Take advantage of that unique aspect of precious metals, whether you have it in a non-bank depository insured or delivered to your home. But, don't give away that unique characteristic of precious metals, and you don't need to use a securitized instrument to own them.
What a neat point you make. The unencumbered nature. It's almost a foreign concept to so many today, the thought that you own this. We think we own our homes, but in reality, there's, in most cases, a mortgage. And even if you're one of the lucky lottery winners who have paid off that mortgage to the bank, do you really own the home? You have to pay real estate and related taxes ad infinitum. which even in communist nations, they find very difficult to believe as many immigrants come to the United States. So, I mean, we really don't own much of anything, but thanks to some legal structure, you do own what's in your hand when you own precious metals. All right, lastly, numismatics, PCGS-graded gold coins have been near the spot price, even under the spot price of gold in some rare cases. Do you see any opportunity there?
The pricing is much more subjective. Right, those big swings based on the perceived rarity and the demand for collectible coins is another level of risk that I don't see a value. I think they're great if you enjoy collectible coins and you enjoy looking at them, and maybe having a few of them for that. But if you're going to put money and you want to have a position in bullion, you take a position in the item that is basically trading on the bullion price and is only being bought for that small premium over there for the fabrication charge, and not get into the subject, you know, that subjective pricing for the rarity component of it. Now, you want to be in physical bullion in these markets if you're looking to capitalize on the potential gains for gold, silver, platinum, and palladium.
Clearly, you feel that the, like as we do here, that a sound core in the precious metals is really the hallmark of success. It's the safety net, the insurance policy for every portfolio, and will become increasingly important as volatility ratchets up. But what else would you find appealing? Equities may be somewhat high, bonds in a 30-year bubble. Is real estate of any interest?
You know, real estate, I think, is in a it's a traditional asset that people say, hey, fortunes have been made in real estate. Real estate also thrives under conditions that are probably going to turn negative. You just look at commercial real estate, right? The economy is changing. The demand for space is dwindling. But I think commercial real estate is a very problematic and fraught with a lot of risk. If you're looking to invest in investment properties, and look, I'm not a real estate expert. I'm just using what I see as my views of things to apply. But one thing I would be concerned about with going into like commercial, residential real estate is the ability of that person to pay. If we get into a financial downturn, you know, will your tenant pay? If you're buying now and the interest rates are still relatively low, and we know that the house prices are an inverse of the interest rates, right? And if interest rates start to rise, then the value of the underlying property will go down. That may not mean anything until you sell it, but when you're going into the turbulence that I think we're going into, unfortunately, sometimes the answer is there aren't a lot of alternatives. And there really isn't, because a lot of the assets that have benefited from the policies and the environment in the past, you know, they're going to be come under pressure with what we're going into and morphing into. So, you know, it's not that we're just precious metals dealers, but the reality is when you take in factors like liquidity and divisibility, interest rate risk, there aren't many options, right? And now there's going to be some equities based on what the company does and the industry it's in. You know, we'll probably do okay, you know, but then again, in a true sell-off, it takes down all categories. You know, I could go through a personal portfolio, but I guess the high-level answer is what we're facing doesn't leave a lot of options. It's not, you know, like in a bull market, it lifts all ships. So then, you know, you can construct a portfolio of all different things, and it wasn't the brilliance of the construction of the portfolio. It was just a rising tide lifted everyone. But I think we're facing a much more challenging future, and it's going to be a much more narrow set of assets that will do well.
If I follow your thoughts correctly, investors might consider a significantly larger allocation of precious metals to the typical portfolio.
We all cover our bases by saying you just go by that hat, you know, percentage. But I think a lot, you know, a person has to think logically and make their own decision. Say, you know, should I maybe be a little more exposed to the metals based on the situation at hand? Because you're one of the few people that make a very important point that I've always made. You don't really own real estate. As long as you have to pay taxes on land, and if you don't pay those taxes, they will take it from you, you really never own real estate. So in the most true sense, it's an asset you're just leasing, like you're renting it. But now with a lot of the tax legislation, especially people who are real estate investors in states like New Jersey, New York, California, Illinois, right, the high tax state, and the new deductions, you know, with what they call the SALT, these are more challenges to that game. So, you know, real estate investing is going to be very geographic, and it's going to depend on what location more than ever.
It's much easier to take a roll of gold eagles or maples in one's pocket amid geopolitical turbulence than it would be to liquidate an illiquid asset at times. So you might like to touch a bit on the PMC ounce rate.
The PMC ounce, it's gotten a lot of attention from analysts that are well-respected. I think the beauty of it is it's constructed in a way it's pretty much done all the thinking as far as it's logically weighted. It's liquid, it's price efficient, and it does have a patent. It received a patent because of all these characteristics, that it's got the ease of trade as if it was an ETF, but it's actually the ownership of physical metal in the client's name at the depository level, the most granular level. It's really serving investors well, and it kind of, you know, even when people say, well, if I put a portion of my portfolio on precious metals, how should I allocate those metals? The PMC ounce basically does it for you, basis and the characteristics that you want in precious metals investing. And I just really appreciate, Chris, the chance to come on and chat about the markets with you and get to share about the PMC ounce with your listeners.
Looking at the PMC ounce rate at the NeptuneGlobal.com website, can't help but notice that when the indices turn downward, it was maybe a time where one would be less inclined to add exposure. But now over the last 3 years or so, things seem to be turning upward, and that might imply better times ahead. That might help encourage investment on a forward basis.
Yes, and it is, as I shared before, I think the precious metals are back in a multi-year uptrend. But when you look at that chart, which is on the homepage, and you look at the line for silver, and you look how high silver was a few years ago, and it came crashing down. You know, when the precious metals pulled back from 2012 to 2015, of course, the PMC ounce is comprised of precious metals, so it went down. But it didn't go down as much as some of the others, right? It was less volatile, and that's the point of it. And then in the last several years, you know, palladium has been outperforming. So the point is, its blended return is delivering a better risk-adjusted return. And whenever we're building a portfolio, right, where there's two things. Everyone wants to chase returns, but it's also managing risk. And mitigating risk or managing risk, one part of that means managing volatility or reducing volatility. So the PMC ounce says, look, you're in the precious metals, you're going to get the blended return, you're going to capture the upside of these metals, but its construction, its diversification is going to help mitigate and temper the risk that you would have being in just one or two of the metals. It's really a logically weighted, constructed vehicle for owning precious metals in its greatest form physically, but mitigating and tempering some of the risk. We encourage everyone to visit us. We also have our phone number there and a contact page. Again, we're a full-service precious metals dealer, but a big differentiator is the PMC ounce. You know, we love to talk with investors about the precious metals market and how we could assist them. We just encourage all inquiries.
All right, Chris Blasi, we'll look forward to hearing updates from you in 2018.
Great, Chris. Thanks a lot, and great year for you and all your listeners.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. Executive orders signed by a sitting president are often overlooked documents when it comes to understanding how a nation, its politics, financial structure, and policies are being directed at home and abroad. Some executive orders get publicized and spotlighted by the media. Many do not. Executive orders, in some instances, represent the hidden source code one needs to understand in order to fill in missing pieces that are often omitted by partisan mainstream media outlets and the editors and producers of those organizations. A little background. An executive order is a directive issued by the President of the United States that manages operations of the federal government and has the force of law. The legal or constitutional basis for executive orders has multiple sources. Article 2 of the United States Constitution gives the president broad executive and enforcement authority to use discretion to determine how to enforce the law or to otherwise manage the resources and staff of the executive branch. The ability to make such orders is also based on express or implied acts of Congress that delegate to the president some degree of discretionary power. Just like legislative statutes and regulations put forth by government agencies, executive orders are also subject to judicial review and may be overturned if the orders lack support by statute or the Constitution. Major policy initiatives require approval by the legislative branch, but executive orders have significant influence over the internal affairs of government, deciding how and to what degree legislation will be enforced, dealing with emergencies, waging wars, and, in general, fine-tuning policies in the implementation of broad statutes. Some of the recent executive orders implemented since Christmas 2017 include protecting America through lawful detention of terrorists, supporting veterans during their transition from uniformed service to civilian life, streamlining and expediting requests to locate broadband facilities in rural America, termination of Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity, adjustments to certain rates of pay, blocking the property of persons involved in serious human rights abuse or corruption. In fact, reading executive orders for the first time can seem like a mundane, sterile process. It's kind of like reading the terms of service that are posted on websites or when you click accept to begin using a new piece of software. Most people just don't do it. But maybe you should. FederalRegister.gov archives and sequentially numbers presidential executive orders. I also found a free app on my smartphone that shows executive orders. It might be worth a look. And while you're at it, download the U.S. Constitution to your smartphone as well. It's a better read than playing solitaire, because the devil is always in the details, and so are the tools to eradicate that devil. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.